Welcome to Here Come the Sequels, a full spoiler podcast where we talk about popular film franchises one movie at a time. I'm Britton.
And I'm Alex.
And that's it. We're all you got today, guys. Alex is back, but Tyler is still away. How you doing, Alex? Welcome home.
I'm doing all right. I didn't get a ghost girlfriend, unfortunately, while I was away.
Did you get a real girlfriend?
No, that's a no on that front as well.
The joke should have been you met someone, but she ghosted you. That should have been the joke.
See, that would then make me think of the movie Ghosted, and nobody wants that.
No, I still haven't finished it. I started it like 2 months ago. And I watch stuff slow, but that's not me. That's a lot.
I had a whole thing with the Ghost Adventures crew. Trust me, they took me on all sorts of adventures. They pulled out one of their crazy inventions that I'm sure works. But it was nothing but static for like 10 hours. No contact with any sort of spirit.
Nope.
They're out there. There's plenty of spirits in the ether is what I have been known to say.
Sure. But you are not a ghost writer. So today on the podcast, we are going to...
we're pulling it all together.
We sure are. Because Tyler is gone, we were trying to figure out how he wanted to spend these few weeks. So we're going to do a franchise that Tyler does not care if he misses his words. he may pop in at some point in one of these episodes. You know, we're kind of letting him make his decisions, but because we are feminists. But we are not... we're doing something because, again, we didn't want to, like, do... So a bunch of movies that Tyler was going to be lamentous that he missed. So what movies are we doing, Alex?
So we're doing the G.I. Joe movies.
Yes, we are.
And this is my fault. But Britain may end up actually being, you know, you may be on the more positive end. I do want to point out. So I just find it weird. You know, the last one that we did, just the two of us, was a few weeks ago when we did Small Soldiers. Uh-huh. And I just think it's really weird that Tyler, the only person on the podcast who is an actual dad, doesn't like war movies. Because obviously, you know, you've got your classic war films. You've got, you know, The Great Escape. You've got Apocalypse Now. You've got Black Hawk Down. You've got Saving Private Ryan. Right. You've got all these classic hits. And I really think that Small Soldiers and the entire G.I. Joe franchise should be included in that list. Tyler, what is wrong with you?
I think you could argue Small Soldiers. Real quick, I did take notes on this movie, so let me grab my notebook.
Oh my goodness, that is fantastic. While he is going ahead and grabbing his notebook, I'm going to give the information for the film that we watched. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra. Last week we did Transformers Rise of the Beast. I think I just want them to stop using Rise in the titles of any movies ever made now until the end of time. Thank you very much. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, directed by Stephen Sommers, our favorite director, in quotes, from the Mummy films. It is from 2009, and it has a 33% critic score on Rotten Tomatoes and a 50% audience score.
That sounds right. I think that Rise, people really just use it to say this is the start of a franchise or a reboot franchise. I think that Rise of the Planet of the Apes is fine, except that it and Dawn should be switched.
Yes.
Just the words.
I mean, I think an argument could be made that all three of those should have different titles. Like, sure. I think even think War could probably be moved around somewhere in there. But
yeah,
we'll get to those eventually.
We will. That's a tougher franchise to parse how we're going to do, but yeah, I know that three of them are pretty good.
Yeah, but like there are some movies like Rise of the Planet of the Apes or Dark Knight Rises where I feel like, okay, there's something thematically going on with that beyond just we're slapping a generic name on here that we think will attract an audience.
That there is a rising of sorts.
Yes. I mean, this movie is The Rise of Cobra for about 5 seconds and then they all get arrested.
Yeah. Which is the weirdest... It's the weirdest, most anticlimactic ending.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah, I didn't take a ton of notes. I kind of gave up, but I did write down a few things.
Okay.
but I didn't write it down, but I will read it out. And that is the synopsis for G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, which reads thus. Armed with the latest in military and spy technology, The team of elite soldiers known as G.I. Joe travel around the globe to wherever their services are needed. In their latest assignment, General Hawk, Duke, and the rest of the G.I. Joe team take on Destro, a corrupt arms dealer, and fight the growing threat of the mysterious Cobra organization. I will go ahead and say I did not grow up a G.I. Joe kid. It's interesting because that I feel like it really did start as just here are toys and dolls of American soldiers. Just like,
yeah,
there was a JFK military doll that was a G.I. Joe technically, but then it took on the 80s cartoon Saturday morning cartoon thing of like, well, now they have like crazy suits and not literal powers, but there's a ninja and that guy's got a bunch of crazy planes.
We attach a loose story framework and gimmicks and we right. create these new characters yeah. that we can use for this brand. Yeah.
It becomes more of a not like superhero adjacent kind of thing. And it was just never my thing growing up. Were you a G.I. Joe kid?
Somewhat.
Yeah.
They did a relaunch of the brand back in like the early 2000s,
mm-hmm.
Where they released like a couple of 3D animated like directed video movies mm-hmm. that I had. I think one was called Spy Troops and the other one was called Valor versus Venom.
Okay.
And they had like a toy launch that went along with that. And I think I had several of those toys. And like I said, I had both of those movies. So I don't know how accurate they are to the G.I. Joe lore, as sure. it were, but that was kind of what was in my head when I was kind of seeing the live action movies as they yeah. were coming out.
Well, it is sad that at no point in this movie does anyone go, G.I. Joe,
yeah.
which was like the thing.
Yeah, the closest yeah. we get is knowing is half the battle, which...
Okay, yeah.
Whatever.
Well, the G.I. Joe PSAs are what I know most because people would like redub those on YouTube videos.
Mm-hmm.
Those are hilarious. The redubbed ones, they're so stupid. My friends and I used to watch those all the time. Oh my God. Those were so funny.
Well, I guess there is also the bit where Ripcord is looking at Heavy Duty, and I can't believe I just said that sentence. and he goes, oh, such lifelike hair. And then Heavy Duty like grabs his hand. He's like, right. And a kung fu grip.
Yeah.
Oh, I get it. That's kind of cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, I was fine with it. Yeah, the characters in this movie are not... The thing that distinguishes them are the actors.
Yes.
Because in terms of what they bring to a thing, Heavy Duty and Duke are the same.
Yeah.
They're literally indistinguishable from each other. Ripcord is a pilot. There's a guy who can hack stuff. Scarlet's a girl.
Yeah.
And Snake Eyes is a ninja.
Yes.
And there you go.
That's our team.
And yeah, General Hawk has a beret. I did enjoy that this movie had people very seriously, had Dennis Quaid going, who when he showed up, I wrote a note, vitamin D. But him being like, get him out. We got a lot of Joes in there. And then you would hear Cobra Commander saying, kill them. Kill all the Joes. But it's played with such seriousness. It was awesome.
Yeah, I for some reason, there are several moments in this movie that just kind of stick with me in terms of like, oh, that's, I. There's something about the execution of this that doesn't work for
right.
me.
Right.
And one of them is after kind of the big first battle where Duke meets the G.I. Joes and there's like a standoff where he's refusing to give them the warheads.
Right.
They set up like this little hologram projection thing of General Hawk.
Yeah.
And suddenly it's just like a full, like, it's not even like a 2D Dennis Quaid or anything. It's like he's actually standing there.
Right.
And it's just such a weird thing of him popping up and going, state your name and rank.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yeah, the whole, the headline and summation of my review for this movie is, no, it's not good, but also.
Yeah, I think... I very much feel the same in that if you're just looking for dumb, big, yes. loud popcorn movie, this probably does the trick. But for me and what little I know about this, you know, this whole the G.I. Joe brand and kind yeah. of the lore and everything, like, as far as I know, like the same comic book writer has been on it for like 40 years.
Oh, wow.
His name's Larry Hama. And apparently they brought him in fairly late in the game to help supervise the script. Mm. So I don't know how accurate this is to like the G.I. Joe mythos and whatever. Yeah, and yeah. It feels a little weird saying that there's a G.I. Joe mythos, but like
right.
there,
I think
there
brand
are sev-
is the right word, but yes.
But there are several decades of comics and like yeah. apparently a lot of it is actually quite good. And so I look at this going, there's probably a much better version of this.
Sure.
And like I look at something like this or even I kind of felt this way about the 2017 Power Rangers movie.
Okay.
And I'm like, I feel like if they had the tone and the storytelling sensibilities of like the first Avengers movie, this would sure. be working a lot better for me.
Yeah.
And like in places, and maybe it's just the Alan Silvestri score, like in places it feels like it's kind of having that same energy.
Yeah.
But then it just gets real stupid.
Right. Well, and there was, I think, a pretty esteemed run of Power Rangers comics not too long ago.
Yeah.
That I think threaded that needle of, yeah, we're going to be a little more sincere with this. We're not going to take it deadly grimdark, but we're going to be a little, the story's going to be a little more substantive. We're going to still have fun, but it's a little more meaningful. You know, it had a little more heft to it without making them, which the new one, I think, does take a more sort of dour stance. So,
yeah. And then when it, see, the Power Rangers movie is interesting, and we'll get to these eventually, too, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
The Power Rangers movie is weird, too, because it's almost like the human drama actually gets, like, semi-interesting. Mm-hmm. That when you get to the last half hour and it just turns into normal Power right. Ranger stuff, you're like, oh, that's not the movie I was watching, though.
Right. It's more of like a fan-forced-it kind of deal.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a good way to describe it.
But this one is a movie that I really can't defend it being good. But what I there's something kind of... Okay, this is not an F-plus for me. It sure. is kind of a good bad. Yeah, like, but more in the sense that not so bad is good, but it's a bad movie, but I kind of enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. There's just something about it that, like, I think the action sequences are put together fine enough. Like, I really don't think they're that bad. And yeah, you know, I think I expected to come away from this grumpier than I did.
Okay, well then I kind of won. I was real worried. I was like, Britain's gonna hate these and be mad at me forever. And you could feel that way about Retaliation and Snake Eyes. We'll find out. Yeah, we can get into the action scenes and then circle back to the cast. For me, I feel like the action scenes are and I feel weird saying about this with a G.I. Joe movie, but I don't find them super aesthetically pleasing.
Sure.
And I don't really care for the editing. I don't like them just pulling out laser guns and like sonic weapons. Like that just feels like too much to me.
Right.
I feel like the closest the movie gets in terms of, oh, that's like an action scene that I want, is the semi like Black Hawk Down scene that they use as a flashback when you can actually see Joseph Gordon-Levitt's face, and they're like, you're gonna run into the building and do some computer stuff, and then like the error strike happens too early and like everything blows up. Like, and I'm not saying I needed G.I. Joe to be Black Hawk Down. That's not what I'm saying. But I feel like that there's like a grounded nature to that action scene that is just completely lost in every other set piece, and it sticks out.
And it probably was easier to sell toys and make it PG-13 with that kind of tone to the fight scenes.
Yeah.
But yeah, it does get very, very silly. I one of my notes was that it really evokes the spirit of both the aughts. It's a very aughts movie.
Yeah.
But also it really does feel like smashing action figures together.
Yes.
Like early on in this movie, it is just character introduction after character introduction. Of different names and special abilities over and over and over again.
Yes.
But that's what it is. And I'm like, you know what? Sure. This is based on action figures. Why not?
Yeah. Maybe it's just like the James Bond nut in me where I'm just like, I wish they were just like using normal like firearms and like actual military weapons instead of just a bunch of like sci-fi nonsense. Because like, there's the bit, because basically at the beginning it's supposed to be like, oh, Cobra has like all of this super futuristic technology because of, I don't even know how much Christopher Eccleston's character, who is Destro, and I don't know if he's even called that in the movie. He's McCullen.
At the end of the movie, Joseph Gordon-Levitt calls him that.
He gets assigned his character card and gets the giant metal face. Yes.
Yeah.
Like him, like they've supplied all this technology to kind of this secret army that's doing all this stuff. And they basically have like Star Wars vehicles.
Yeah.
Like you have like this giant, it's not like a starfighter, but it's moving around like it's right. something from Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And it's like destroying all these like military helicopters and things. And it didn't work for me. It just seemed just really weird. Yeah. And off. I'm like, this works if they're fighting aliens, but they're not. They're fighting like a terrorist organization.
Yeah, with nanomites.
But to be yes, with nanomites. We'll get to the nanomites. But to be fair, I felt the same way as I did with Captain America: The First Avenger. I feel like of the Hydra stuff goes too over the top, and aesthetically is just too silly, especially if the more contemporary elements of the MCU are supposed to be like, no, this is like happening in our real world.
Right.
It feels weird to then retroactively go back and then like, there's all this sci-fi semi-futuristic stuff. So that's just like, that's all personal stuff. Like if that doesn't bother you, then none of this is going to matter.
Sure.
But I didn't care for all of that stuff. I think the special effects are a very mixed bag.
Yes.
And this movie cost $175 million. The first Transformers movie cost less than this.
That's wild.
The second one cost more, which came out the same year as this. But the first one cost less, and it looks 1,000 times better.
Yeah, despite, and got nominated for Oscars.
Despite my reservations with how a lot of the action is shot in those movies.
Sure.
It looks a lot better. And like this... Like, they try, once again, it's too Star Wars-y for me. Like, they try and do basically a space battle, but it's underwater with a bunch of subs shooting at each other. And it just looks awful. It just looks terrible.
So, some of the effects, like, when they show Arnold Vosloo morphing, and they're putting him through the Mass Effect character creation screen.
Yeah.
That I was okay with, considering what the effect was and the time period. There are some things kind of throughout that I was like, yeah, that's okay, sure. And then a lot of it is like, oh, all right, it's not. It's very clearly 2009.
Yeah. I feel like probably the Paris sequence is when they utilize the special effects the best.
Sure.
It's probably the most consistent overall. But like, I just remember the shot of them going down the elevator when they're in the pit, the big G.I. Joe base. And they're just showing level after level. Rough. And they're like, oh, there's just like this giant sub like training thing, and it's just a bunch of water and boats, you know, submarines flying around. Like I said, it's Star Wars, the way that they're moving. And then like it just looks super green screeny, and it just doesn't hold up great. And if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, but I feel like I had a similar reaction when I first saw the movie of like, oh, this is a lot more green screeny than I would have wanted. And like I said, it's a G.I. Joe movie. It's based on a line of action figures. I shouldn't be asking for all that much. But like I said, I think there's enough good parts of this. Mm-hmm. I see a good movie somewhere in here.
Sure.
And Retaliation, at least on aesthetic level, I think gives me more of what I want. Even though that movie is not particularly great.
Uh-huh.
I also feel like the editing in this is not great.
Out of absolutely nowhere you'll get a flashback to Storm Shadow, and they put the flashbacks in the weirdest moments.
I completely agree. It almost feels like this is a rough cut of the movie, and it's like we refuse to remove any sequences. Like, I'd be curious to know what the deleted footage is.
Sure.
So I'm like, there can't be that much, right? I mean, this movie's under 2 hours, so there probably is.
Yeah.
But still, it just, it's very sporadic. And I'm surprised that the fight scenes between Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow weren't driving you up the wall. Like,
they're not. Yeah, those aren't great.
And it's like, you have two ninjas fighting each other with swords. Like, this should be the coolest part of the movie. And it's
Well, you also have those scenes are performed by Byung-Hun Lee and Ray Park.
Yes.
Who are good at doing that.
Yes.
Like, that should be an easy thing to execute. Because you don't have, you can just like have the actors perform it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that wasn't terrific.
And like their last fight at the end, which I actually like how it's surprising how violent that gets, because like Storm Shadow's getting cut up and there's like blood and stuff.
Yeah.
Which once again, this continues to confuse me. And I will continue to bring this up whenever it presents itself. X-Men Origins Wolverine came out the same year. Not a drop of blood in that whole film. Meanwhile, this movie, Storm Shadow's just covered in cuts and stuff. I don't know what the MPAA standards are for blood in PG-13 movies. Yeah. If it's just like, yeah, we kind of just toss it in whenever. We can digitally remove those if they don't like it. I don't know. It just,
yeah,
I get very confused by that. But points to the movie for doing what they did with that.
Right.
That being said, just real quick, yeah. I really detest that end fight scene between the two of them, just because I can tell there's a lot of good choreography and they're covering the frame with stupid lightning effects.
Yep. Yep.
Stop doing that.
I know. No, I know. It's yeah, I agree. The kid fight is wild when they yes. flash back to the two of them as children, and the children are like, ah, and yes. just screaming at each other and just going at it. Like, that was nuts. I was like, I don't like seeing kids do this.
But also,
this is just wild.
It's one of the better scenes in the movie.
Sure. Yeah. That was a weird, like, that got very Mortal Kombat. Where yeah. it's like, oh, we have to show the like character backstory screen. Hurry. Yeah. All right. Anyway, back to our movie.
Yeah, but then it also like raises very weird questions of like, what was Kid Snake Eyes doing there in the first place? Like, it's one of those things where yeah. it's like, okay, if you're going to show me a flashback and give me backstory, then give me backstory. Like,
I was wondering before that shot, like, okay, that scene, it's like, okay, I believe Ray Park is not East Asian. Is Snake Eyes supposed to be? Is that like, am I gonna feel about this? If they never give a name other than Snake Eyes, I guess he doesn't have an ethnicity, but he's doing very and then they show like, oh no, he's a white guy who was in this country and was a thief and then got taken in by these monks who trained him to be an assassin, which is weird.
Yeah.
But like you said, well, why is there a white kid running around?
Yeah.
Like, was he like, did a GI drop him somewhere? I don't know. It was his father named Joseph. Like, what's the... Oh, that was strange.
Yeah, so obviously, like, the Snake Eyes movie, since Henry Golding is playing Snake Eyes, like, that is a hard reboot that is not connected to these movies at all.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see which universe is better. It's probably this one.
Isn't Elodie Young in the next one? Did I see that right?
Yeah.
She's good. I like her.
She doesn't get all that much to do.
I assumed so.
The G.I. Joe movies ain't gonna fail us there. Aside from Sienna Miller and Channing Tatum, I like this cast.
The cast is fun. We were talking about this beforehand. Christopher Eccleston, I think, is genuinely solid in it. Again, it's one of those deals where, yeah, the movie's bad, but he is doing it. He is working on it, and I enjoyed watching him in the film. Did Joseph Gordon-Levitt do the voice? Do we know if that was him or not?
I think he did, but you can't tell because it's so heavily modulated.
Right, right. Yeah, that's funny and silly.
Yeah. He is not in the next one. They basically are just like, yeah, we've heavily modulated his voice so we can cast anyone as long as he's wearing a helmet.
Yeah. I thought Arnold Vosloo was funny because he's like really playing it up.
Yeah.
He's really handing it up. That was fun.
I do like how Stephen Summers is able to bring some of his regulars back.
Totally.
Who plays it? It's the same guy from, it's Benny from Mummy.
Oh, Adewale Akinnoye Agbaje?
No. He's
heavy duty.
I can't remember his name in Mummy Returns. No, it's Brendan Fraser's friend who's like keeps double crossing him in the first film.
Oh.
And he's in There Will Be Blood.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
He's the crazy doctor when Joseph Gordon-Levitt goes into that bunker. That's
wow.
him. And that's a character from the lore. Dr. Mindbender, I believe is his name.
Good.
But I'm like, okay, that's cool that they're able to bring them back. And, you know, I've talked about this before with Brendan Fraser. So I've said, like, this movie is technically in the Mummy universe. If you watch the movie, it's not apparent to you at all. You're just like, oh, there's a bunch of fun cameos because it's a Stephen Sommers movie.
Right.
The only reason I know this is because I listened to the commentary track a long time ago for this movie. Why I was listening to the commentary track? I was a young boy full of heart and imagination. What can
You're
I say?
You're on a date. What else were you going to do?
I was on a date with a ghost.
You want to watch the G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra commentary?
But we
don't have to look at it.
But basically, he says that character is a descendant of Rick O'Connell. That's it.
My argument would be that his intention of that doesn't... It's not in the movie.
Yes.
And it's not like a deleted... It's just like Stephen Sommers would have liked that to have been a thing that caught on.
I could go back and listen to that and be like, oh, he was totally joking. He was...
Sure, sure.
That was totally just like... That was a throwaway gag. He was not being serious about it. But from what I remember, he was like, yeah, that was just like a fun little thing I wanted to do. Sure. Whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, I don't anymore buy that these movies are connected to Mummy. I don't think it's in there. But I like seeing Brendan Fraser.
I do have to ask, because obviously Channing Tatum doesn't really want to be here. And even in real life, he's talked about how he was contractually obligated to do this movie and didn't really want to be there. Like, I'm imagining somebody like Brendan Fraser, like, 10 years prior.
Yeah.
Playing Duke in this. Sure. Or just, like, somebody with a little bit more charisma and who's actually game to be there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Channing Tatum, he seems to be, like, a little bit into it whenever he's with Marlon Wayans. Just because I'm sure that's a lot of fun on set. Just Marlon Wayans just being funny. Mm-hmm. But, like, whenever he's just doing, like, exposition scenes or attempting to have chemistry with Sienna Miller, like, it's just, he's just saying lines.
No, Channing Tatum's an interesting actor. I one of my notes was a line that Marlon Wayans says, Marlon Brando, that Marlon Wayans said, which is, oh, Duke wasn't born, he's government issue. And I said, that's a good way to describe Channing Tatum's performance. And frankly, it's a good way to describe Channing Tatum in some of his movies, because Channing Tatum is so easy to slot into be a square-headed middle America military dream.
Yes.
Like, just be a guy who's like, no, I'm going to protect my country and come home to my girl and my dog. Like, just the most, you know, rote, pat kind of thing. I think Channing Tatum is capable of more than that. I remember really liking him in Foxcatcher. I haven't seen the Jump Street movies or Magic Mike, but I've heard people say that he's a lot of fun in comedies and that he's actually pretty good in Magic Mike. Like, I think he's just somebody who, because of the way he looks, he got cast as like the Jarhead and everything for a while.
Yeah.
And we kind of, or the Step Up stuff. And it's like, he actually has something else to him. I don't think he's like secretly Mark Rylance or anything, but I think he's got a little more, you just have to cast him a little more creatively. And I think also Bennett Miller made Foxcatcher, so he's going to do something interesting.
Yeah. I am a little curious, though, because I know this was fairly early on in Channing Tatum's career. Like, I think he had just done, like, whichever Step Up movie he was in. And I think She's the Man, which we've talked about before.
Yeah.
So I do wonder, like, if you gave him this movie, like, 5 or 6 years later in his career, if he would have been more on board.
Yeah.
It could just be I'm not interested in this stupid movie.
Right.
Or it could be he lacks experience with bigger budget films.
Sure. And also, there is not much on the page for Duke. Like, Duke is not a character.
It's so weird because he's the protagonist.
Right.
And it's just nothing.
It is. And a lot of times in movies and TV shows, the lead character is not the most interesting. They are the avatar. They are the intro character into the world.
Sure.
But ideally, and that's not always true. You have your Don Drapers and that's it. But you do have a character. And I think Channing Tatum could do this, but he's just, Duke has nothing. He has a couple of motivations, not really, that the denouement of the movie doesn't even really rest on him. It rests on Marlon Wayans. Like,
yeah, it is weird just how inactive Duke is in the final act. Like, he basically, like, he chases down the bad guys, but they would have been caught regardless.
Duke just kind of, I think he's there to fit the, like, again, middle America fantasy of the military. Like, he's there to be that guy, which I find annoying, but okay.
Well, from what little I know, Duke traditionally, like, he just is the leader of the G.I. Right. Joe team, and he is still kind of like stern military man, but he's like, he's the leader. He's calling the shots. He's like, I'm thinking more like Captain America.
Sure.
But having him kind of be like the new guy on the team who's having to train and prove himself, it feels like they're trying to Hollywoodize it. It feels like they're taking this property and they're like, okay, well, we'll make Duke the protagonist, but he's going to join the team and we're going to have to reform. Yeah. Like, it feels like, oh, you could have just done probably what was done in the first place and just, like, there's probably just a status quo where here's our starting team and then new people show up occasionally. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I think the rest of the cast, the other characters, if they have more personality, it's because of the actors. Yeah. It's because Marlon Wayans has a lot of energy. It's because Ottawa Akinoye Agbaje is charismatic. It's because it's Arnold Vosloo and Brendan Fraser and Christopher Eccleston, these guys who know what they're doing. And I think Sienna Miller, again, is handed nothing. It's very, very bland. Rachel Nichols is given slightly more, but not even really.
I feel like Rachel Nichols has a chance to be at least a little charismatic, and I do feel like she and Marlon Wayans have a decent amount of chemistry. Like, it's a very thin romance between the two of them. But, like, whenever she shows up and she's just kind of got, like, a warm, bubbly presence, and I'm like, okay, I'm glad she's on screen. Like, I like her in this.
Well, she's supposed to be the, like, I am a science person and emotions don't make sense to me kind of a thing, which they don't really do a lot with that, but it's there.
That also may be the dumbest set of dialogue in any movie ever, where she says emotions aren't based in science and thus I don't believe in them.
Right.
Go to like middle school science classes. Emotions are triggered by chemical releases in your brain.
Look at any social media post. Look at any nonfiction cart at my library. That's what people are reading, is the science of your emotions and how to have better sex at 40.
And how to talk to spirits.
And how to talk to spirits and World War II.
But I felt so bad when she had to say that. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, who in their right mind would write that? And I'm like, once again, I need to reiterate this. I understand this is a G.I. Joe movie. I understand this is based off a line of action figures and a cartoon from the 80s. That is still the dumbest set of dialogue from any movie. That is worse than the Martha moment from Batman vs. Superman.
Called shot.
Now, I think the fact that the Martha moment is played as a overly dramatic moment that's supposed that's what Batman's character arc hinges on. That's what makes it ultimately worse, I would say. But just like, if we're measuring like sheer level of intelligence that goes into that dialogue. Sorry, I had to talk about that. It baffled me.
I started on a theory that I quickly got rid of, where I was like, okay, I wonder if this movie obviously does a lot of intense sexualizing of its female characters.
Yes.
And briefly, they have Marlon Wayans and Channing Tatum walk around shirtless and being all hot. It made me a little uncomfortable after a while. And I will just go ahead and say, it is not inherently problematic to be attracted to an actor or actress. That doesn't make you sexist or whatever. Like, it's okay to be attracted to people, and it's there is a way in which you can make your characters sexy and sort of communicate these qualities about them in a way that is not crass or leery. But this movie, like, they are always putting Sienna Miller and Rachel Nichols in like tank tops and cleavy dresses, and their cameras roving all over them, and like the way the angles are, it's very overt and it's uncomfy. But I, at first I thought, okay, is there some kind of commentary here where they're both in bodysuits, but Rachel Nichols's goes all the way up to her neck and Sienna Miller's is cleavage. So yeah. Like she's the bad guy. So therefore, you know, she's more revealing, but the good girl is more covered up. Very quickly, I dispelled that theory once they started giving Rachel Nichols other costumes. And I was like, all right, never mind.
She's also mind controlled. So there's that. I don't know if that
true,
helps.
True, yeah.
I
think they're also both British. Rachel Nichols might be Canadian. I know Sienna Miller's British.
I'm not sure. I know Rachel Nichols is also briefly in the 2009 Star Trek movie. And I don't believe she has a British accent in that.
Yeah, she's American. I think she just did one when she was in, she was on The Librarians, the TV show I quite enjoy, and she was British in that. So I guess I just assumed.
Yeah, I kind of feel bad for Sienna Miller in this movie. I actually feel like she's having to, like, she has, like, a few different tones that she's having to play.
Yeah.
Because she's got, like, the flashback stuff where she's just, like, normal, all-American, soon-to-be wife, you know?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, okay, I feel like she can play that fine. I feel like that's what she probably did in American Sniper. I don't remember.
Sure.
But, like, okay, that's probably closer to other roles that she's played, or, like, that's more straightforward, like, what you would expect from a just, like, normal dramatic movie. But then she's got, like, the super really, really bad, like flirty scenes almost, like when she's acting against Christopher Eccleston and sometimes Channing Tatum.
Uh-huh.
And she's, like, in her Baroness outfits, and, like, when she's talking with her husband, the Baron, like, all that stuff. So she's having to play, like, super flirty and sexy, and, yeah, I don't know if it was just kind of the uncomfortable factor with just, like, the outfits that they were making her wear. And then she's having to do the action stuff and give one-liners, and I just feel like she is not built for that.
Right.
Like, there are so many lines of dialogue. Like, the first bit where she and Duke first run into each other and she kicks him in the face and she goes, "You have to admit, you had that coming."
Yeah.
And her delivery of it is just awful. It's just awful. And I'm not saying that that's a good line of dialogue, because it's not. But I feel like she is just not up to that. And maybe it is just the takes that they were using.
Sure.
Maybe it's just the fact that they were giving her all these ridiculous costumes. Like, I remember there's the bit where in the Paris scene where she gets to the building and she's in the elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a camera shot as it pans up with the elevator as it rises. And she's just holding this big old machine gun. And she just looks silly.
Well, there's a line early on in the movie, Byung-Hun Lee, who is cool in it, because Byung-Hun Lee is cool.
Yes. I really liked him in this. I kind of wish, can we just make Storm Shadow the main character? Like, why not?
One day we should do Seven Samurai, Magnificent Seven, and the Magnificent Seven remake.
Yes.
Because all three of them are pretty cool movies. The remake is way cooler than I expected, and he's really good in it.
Yes.
And it's got D'Onofrio. But that's... He early on is talking to Sienna Miller about, like, if your husband touches you, I'm supposed to kill him. And she's like, yeah, I know. And then later he does kill her husband, and he's like, I said if he touched you, I would kill him. And she goes, I heard you the first time.
Yeah.
And it's a weird delivery of a line that doesn't work. Like, it's not, that shouldn't be the sentence she says.
Right.
She should be like, I was aware. I don't know what she, but I heard you the first time is such a weird phrasing. That just feels like two different scripts come back together.
But then, like, when we get to the end of the movie, is it just supposed to be, well, she was brainwashed the whole time, so she is washed of all of her sins? Or was that supposed to come from some sort of character place?
Right.
I don't know. Like, all of that's just really muddled and doesn't quite work. Also, as far as I'm aware, in classic G.I. Joe mythology, and this doesn't necessarily mean this is a bad thing. In the ancient scrolls. Apparently, like, Duke and the Baroness are not an item in that, and from what I remember, the Baroness is actually, like, Russian.
Huh.
So she's got, like, this, and I remember specifically from those movies I talked about, she's got, like, a very thick, like, comical Russian accent, and that probably stems back to, like, the cartoon show from the 80s. But then also, like, Cobra Commander is not her brother. Like, there's not, like, all the soap opera stuff that they kind of just add on there because I guess Duke needs some pathos because he has nothing else in this movie. Yeah. Like, that stuff's not inherently a problem. But it is one of those things where it's like, once it's done in execution, it's just, it's really cheesy and stupid. And maybe you should have just done what they did in the comics.
Right. Yeah. I did note that Duke is really catty. That is kind of a personality trait. Because he has a moment where he says, like, oh, I guess we're all seeing ghosts today. After, like, I guess he saw Sienna Miller and, like, I think it's Snake Eyes sees Storm Shadow.
Yeah.
Which is such a, like, mean girl thing to say. And later, Rachel Nichols says something and he's like, and who says you're not a thinker? And I was like, no one. No one's called her intelligence into question, Duke. You're so, like, Kitty has claws. Oh, my God.
I think that line, he may actually be talking to Ripcord.
Oh, okay. That's still pretty catty.
I mean, it is. No, my favorite is towards the end when Christopher Eccleston and Channing Tatum are having their big, like, show off against each other.
Uh-huh.
Which... Christopher Eccleston has the acting chops to actually try and make a lot of this convincing.
He's pushing through.
I'm not saying Channing Tatum doesn't.
Sure, sure.
It's a weird movie that he's in. That's all I'm saying.
Right.
But there's a bit where Christopher Eccleston goes, I'm about to make you very unhappy. And Duke just, like, looks up and he goes, I'm already unhappy. Okay. Whatever.
Does not have the punch of that's my secret, I'm always angry.
So, like, C+, right?
Oh, yeah. Notch above average. No, it's so dumb. But it's so funny.
That being said, I do want to highlight the Paris sequence.
Okay.
Because I think that's probably the best overall, aside from that flashback, I think that's probably the best executed sequence in the film, even though it has dumb Iron Man suits in it.
Yeah.
Once again, connecting back to Transformers Rise of the Beast, stop trying to shove Iron Man suits in your Hasbro movies. And apparently that was like a Steven Sommers idea. That was like something that he had in his mind as something he wanted to put in a movie for a long time. So this was the opportunity where he's like, no, I'm going to shove that in there. I have many questions about the Delta 6 accelerator suits. The first of which being, why do they give it to the newbies?
Yes.
The heavy duty is right there. He's teaching them how to use them. Why does he not use it himself?
Exactly. Well, it is weird because they just make you run real fast.
Yes.
And jump.
And they have lots of guns.
Yeah, like Groot.
Yeah. But yeah, I the whole time I was like, why is Scarlet being forced to ride like a motorcycle in this scene, and like Snake Eyes is just running and like hanging on the truck for most of it?
Yeah, he's like, just skitching.
I know they say that like Duke is in like the 99th percentile of everyone who's ever trained to be in G.I. Joe, but I still feel like literally anyone else on the team would be better in those suits.
It does. It absolutely. And they kind of make Heavy Duty the leader, I guess, by default.
But he's not even really a leader. He mostly just shouts orders at the beginning, and that's
right,
it.
Right. Speaking of leaders, Jonathan Pryce is in this movie as the U.S. president.
Yes. And I actually think that's one of the more effective things that they do.
Sure.
Because basically, they kind of have several scenes throughout the movie of him basically just getting updates as to what's going on. And he's basically like,
my God,
this is weird. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they put him in a bunker, which is owned by Christopher Eccleston's company. And then Arnold Vosloo, who has now been morphed into Jonathan Pryce, walks out and takes his place, which is the plot of the next movie. So they don't drop that.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Well, I feel like any sort of sequel would just like, yeah, we could just do whatever. And they do kind of do that with regards to abandoning most of this cast, but we'll get there. But I do think that's like a genuinely fun like cliffhanger to leave the movie on of him walking into the Oval Office and then he does his little whistle tune that he's been doing throughout the rest of the movie. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed him in this. what else happens in the movie?
How did you feel about the opening flashback with McCullen's ancestor?
Oh, I assumed you were unhappy because apparently everyone in the past spoke English 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's a very weird way to start a G.I. Joe movie.
And I grant that, like, I don't need that to be as deeply researched as, like, the Vikings TV show where they're like, well, they can't just speak French. Like, what were they speaking at the time?
Yeah.
And, like, figuring all that out. And how would they be communicating to the Scott that they've captured and everything? And what would he be speaking? But it still felt weird that they're all just speaking English. Also, it's funny towards the end when they're trying to figure out the code phrase when Ripcord is piloting the plane. And they figure out it's a Celt word. And Rachel Nichols is like, wait, he's Scottish. There's probably a Celt word. And I can't remember what the word is. And she says it. And she goes, they go, what is that? She goes, this word, it's Celt. And I was like, you just said a Celt word. Why are you acting like you can't remember it now?
Yeah, it was weird that they're just like speaking English just straight up in that opening. And then later on, it's like, no. They weren't speaking English. We promise.
Which, like, if it was all within one nation, if it was just, like, French people, and they were like, we're just kind of them all speak English with French accents, don't worry about it. They're speaking French, but you hear it in English, moving on. But instead, yeah, it was a little silly.
And also,
it is also a little preview or callback to Van Helsing in terms of aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's black and drippy.
Completely agree. That is a very accurate description.
Some sweaty castles.
I was mainly confused by that plot point just because it felt like a very weak setup and payoff of like, oh, Ripcord wants to fly, so now he gets his chance to fly. Right. If you want a better version of this, go read DC The New Frontier. This is Hal Jordan's entire arc in that book, and it's so much better done.
Yeah.
But that's a different property, so I'll stop trying to stay on track here. There are spirits in that. I did just think it was weird because, like, nobody else in, like, the Cobra army or whatever is speaking Celtic.
Right.
So, yeah. Did Christopher Eccleston have that specifically built of, like, that is my getaway vehicle? If everything goes haywire, that is my getaway vehicle.
Right.
If they had set it up that way, then maybe I would have bought it.
I also acknowledge that it doesn't have to be, but why are there's no snake aesthetic?
Yeah, it's weird. At what point do they actually... At what point do they actually call themselves Cobra, though? Is that literally just at the end?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess that's why. Yeah, the end where they have all this, like, the good guys have won, but secretly, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is turning Eccleston into Destro and setting up the next movie. He's like, I shall be Cobra Commander. And then they get arrested and put in cylinders by top men. It's so funny.
Yeah. I absolutely loathe that Cobra Commander design at the end where it's like, Darth Vader, if he went shopping at Hot Topic for a couple hours.
Yeah.
It just looks really weird. And like you were saying, like, there's no snake aesthetic. So, like, what is that?
Why is
Cobra, and it feels very much like they're afraid to do, like, the classic Cobra Commander design where he's got, like, this all, like, navy blue uniform and it's got, like, this hood on it. I don't know if it was, like, that would look too silly compared to what they did, or, like, I don't know. Maybe they did do testing on it, and they're like, it doesn't work, we have to do something else. I don't know.
I'm assuming in the next movie there'll be a scene where somebody will walk in through a bunch of open doors, and then Cobra Commander will be sitting in a cell, bouncing a ball off the wall, and saying, is it time for our session? Or something like that.
I'm not going to give too much away, but Walton Goggins is in the scene where there's the whole, there's a prison section with Walton Goggins, and he does actually get to do things.
Well, that's good. He deserves to. He's great.
Not much, but he gets to act.
Well, that's all I really need from Walton Goggins. Great. Love that guy.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the bad guy in this movie, and that just continues to boggle my mind.
It's such a weird... And such that I really was like, is he only in the flashbacks? Because I would buy that is another actor heavily made up.
Yeah.
And another actor's voice, and JGL got the paycheck. Like,
yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah. I just find so much of it astounding in terms of like being a franchise starter. Because like so many of the choices made are just like, yeah, we're just pushing that to a sequel. We're definitely going to get one, right, guys?
Right.
Like, I'm just thinking, like, the comparison that I keep making in my head is the first Transformers movie. Not just because of, like, budget comparisons, but also, like, it's a Hasbro franchise. It came out a couple years before this, and that's probably what gave this movie the green light in the first place.
Sure, sure.
But in terms of, like, a franchise starter, that first movie is a complete story. Like... Beginning, middle, and end. We can talk about whether or not it's good, but it is a complete story.
Right.
There is a little tease, like, mini after credits thing of, like, oh, one of the Decepticons is still alive. Maybe more could be done. But that's it. If that was the only Transformers movie made, fine. Not a problem. But this movie pushes so much of, like, we're gonna get more.
Yeah.
This
yeah.
is a pilot. You're gonna get more.
Right.
It's very strange. Very strange.
It is, well, and now, you know, we're going to get the G.I. Joe Transformers movie, because they're totally going to make it.
Yes, because Transformers Rise of the Beast was a hit.
Such a hit, and everyone's talking about it. God. It would be funny if Dennis Quaid came back.
He's fine in this.
He's fine. He has nothing to do. He heals real quick, but sure.
That's fine. You got a cane. It's fine.
Sure.
I'm just looking at the credits of this movie to make sure we didn't miss anyone. Nope, that was it. We covered them all. I feel like there's so many places in this movie where I was like, can we stop doing the extended CG tunnels?
Right. You're all right. Yeah, yeah.
They always look horrible. Like, that whole particle accelerator set, like, the set is fine. Where they're actually like, oh, we got to weaponize the warheads, even though the effect of that is really silly.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's just going to keep spinning around in this tube and whatever. It's fine. But it's just like, it's this really long, extended, just like CG thing.
Right.
And I know, like, particle accelerators, like, are big and complex and whatnot. But, like, maybe... If you can't make it look good, maybe don't have that be a part of the movie.
So what just occurred to me, one of the big MacGuffin here is that there's this technology of nanomites or whatever.
Yes.
That are tiny little robots that can do anything, including eat metal. And at the end, Marlon Wayans kills them by getting them to start eating his plane, flies all the way up into the atmosphere, ejects, and they eat his plane. And I guess, what is to stop them from just falling back into the... on the Earth, do they burn up in the atmosphere? What are the carbon-based machines?
I think the idea is that he gets it far enough into the atmosphere where it dissipates, or like, I don't know if it gets like sucked further and it kind of just shoots out into space. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But I think it the idea is supposed to be it is high enough so that gravity is not going to push it back down.
Right. Okay. Fine. I'll do it.
I do want to... I just keep wanting to make comparisons because this is all I do. This is all I do on this podcast. This is all I'm good for. It's the same MacGuffin as No Time to Die.
Okay, yeah.
And I do just think it's funny. It's like... No Time to Die is like clever and kind of creepy how it's used.
And also has a pale villain with some stuff on his face.
Right, who gets quickly dispatched. it's interesting just comparing that to this, and the best they got is it eats metal and we're gonna destroy the Eiffel Tower. Like, to me, it comes off as they were like, we're gonna destroy like a big icon, we're gonna do like a Roland Emmerich type thing.
Sure.
Because that's what these big summer movies do. And they picked the Eiffel Tower because that hadn't been done before, and then they worked backwards from that. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, that could make sense.
It is also interesting to see how just Paris is used in just movies we've watched recently. Because, sure. Like, I'm just thinking of John Wick 4. That's all I'm thinking of right now. I don't need like 50 shots of just CG Iron Man suits and not Rachel Nichols on a motorbike just chasing a truck.
Yeah.
Like I said, that's probably the best executed action scene in the film.
So there are a lot of new suit Bubbas in this movie.
That is right. That's new, true.
New suit Bubbas.
I did mention Alan Silvestri's score and how it feels like a proto Avengers kind of score.
Sure.
I didn't like it. I didn't really like it at all.
He was getting out of the system.
I do like Alan Silvestri. I think he's a fine composer, and it took me a while to get sold on the Avengers theme. I think it's mostly just because they kept reusing it. Sure. That by the time you get to like Infinity War, it's like it has some impact,
right?
And obviously, like the Back to the Future score is fantastic. I really like his theme from Castaway. Like he's a good composer, but this, it feels like just a lot of it just feels like generic action temp music, and particularly like there's a lot of percussion in it. Like, but it's just like rock band drums.
Right. Yeah,
and it feels like it's trying. It's just shy of an electric guitar to really make it like cheesy and like it's like cool, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But it still just feels really lame. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I know that's a weird thing to be focused on in this movie, but
on brand for our podcast.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't know if I have that much more to say about G.I. Joe, Rise of a Dead Franchise.
Yeah, I do.
Once again, it's a war movie. Tyler, go watch it. I'm giving G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra a D+.
I'm also doing D+. Okay. I thought I might end up rating it higher, but all right. Good deal.
You've taken over Tyler's spot where we bicker the whole time and then we end up giving it the same grade.
Oh, we didn't bicker, but yes. Yeah, because it's, like I said, it is kind of enjoyably bad. It's not an F+. It's not a full-on, like, this is Tammy and the T-Rex, this is The Room. It is not that.
Yeah.
But it's stupid, sometimes in a charming way. Gah, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
I feel the same. I think my only other note is just, like, at some point, I would like to go back and read some of Larry Hama's comic run, just as a point of comparison. I'm sure. Just curious.
Yeah,
I could read the first run of that and be like, they should have just made that the movie. Right. Why did they not do that? But I did find it interesting that a lot of the behind the scenes stuff that I looked at, and I didn't look at all that much, but like some of the things that they were pinpointing is like positives or like things to like talk about in the behind the scenes stuff. It's like, no, that's not a plus. It's not a plus that you had half the pre-production time that yeah. you normally do. That's right. Not a plus. And then they kept going on and on about like trying to be faithful to like the G.I. Joe mythology. And that's why they brought Larry Hama on board. And there's specifically a moment where Marlon Wayans talks about it. And he's like, yeah, when I signed on, I told Steven Summers, I was like, I know how these the comic book guys can get the fans, and if we mess this up, I'm gonna get you. I'm like, well, I guess he got him.
Yeah, take that, snails.
Yeah, I just feel like ultimately Steven Summers was not the best fit for this material. I don't think his sensibilities really work for this in the way that they did for The Mummy. Kind of.
Right. Or Van Helsing, definitely.
Well, I mean, I like Van Helsing more than most, but
I have not seen it since it came out. I would like to rewatch it at some point.
I like the opening that's in black and white. That scene's fun.
Did you ever watch Werewolf by Night?
No, I haven't.
That's a fun one. That's a fun little thing.
I'm behind on my MCU stuff, but considering I will probably not watch several of their shows at this point. I will get to that one.
I think that one, it's like a one-off. I think it's a fairly safe, like, yeah, it's Halloween's coming up. You know, knock it out. Have a nice time. Go back to bed.
It's spooky season.
Yeah. Do you have a recommendation? Do you have anything to give us?
Do I have anything? No, I don't have anything. I was out of town. I watched reruns of Everybody Loves Raymond, Parks and Rec, The Office, and Seinfeld. And I was flipping through channels, and the last 5 minutes of The Flash were on HBO, which makes me even more concerned about us rewatching it for the podcast. Yeah, Everybody Loves Raymond. Pretty funny, gotta say. I was kind of surprised.
Well, I have a couple of movies saved up that I'll dole out over the next few days. They're all older movies, because that's the mood I'm in these days. I'm going to go in the order that I watched them so that they don't become less fresh in my brain. And so that's going to start with 1948's Easter Parade. This is a movie starring Fred Astaire and Judy Garland. The movie has a story that I didn't really understand. It doesn't really matter.
Kind of like G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra.
Kind of like G.I. Joe. Well, honestly, a lot like White Christmas, it's a movie that is named after a holiday, has nothing to do with that holiday. At the beginning and the end, it's kind of about it. It's not about that at all. But that's fine. I've watched a bunch of Gene Kelly movies, and I was like, I should watch more Fred Astaire. So I started doing that. And this one's fun. It's also got Ann Miller, and who's terrific, and Peter Lawford, and I think that's very funny because of a Mystery Science Theater episode called Angel's Revenge. It's a fun movie. Old musicals have this levity to them that I find really comforting. And Judy Garland is Judy Garland. She's delightful. There's a sequence where she and Peter Lawford are watching a guy played by Jules Munchen who's doing what I guess is supposed to be like a funny monologue about how to make a salad. But Judy Garland is like genuinely cracking up. Like the actor is cracking up, and you see her like turning and looking at Peter Lawford and laughing. Like that's really charming to watch her. And the movie opens with a number called Drum Crazy that Fred Astaire does. That's tremendous. Like even if you don't watch the movie, just watch Drum Crazy. It's so much fun. It's all because he's trying to steal a rabbit stuffed animal from a boy. So he distracts him with drums and dancing. It's awesome. And he has a group number towards the end that's really good. So it's not like the most amazing musical. It's not even the best musical that I've watched recently. But it's a fun one and a nice little introduction to Fred Astaire. And it's always good to see Judy Garland. So Easter Parade.
You have Fred Astaire and Judy Garland. I have Ray Romano.
Deborah, I'm drum crazy.
Help. We should use one of those detestable AI programs to write an Everybody Loves Raymond episode, and then we can do a little script read. I think that'd be fun.
Oh, I miss Ray.
I'll just be the narrator.
Okay.
You and Tyler can do the voices.
That actually sounds like a really good time. I think that would be delightful. Well, yeah, guys, we're going to be back next year and next week.
No, next year. We're taking a hiatus.
Bye.
See, there was a long break between G.I. Joe movies, okay? Right. And we just want to mirror that.
That's true.
See you in 2024, suckers.
We are going to, of course, be talking about G.I. Joe Retaliation. We love and miss Tyler, and you can find us online at herecomethesequels.blogspot.com. You can email us at httsequels@gmail.com, or is it herecomethesequels@gmail.com?
Whatever.
And you can find us on X at httsequels. And you were on Spotify and Apple. We're on podcast stuff. Find us. Tell a friend. Thanks again to Carly from Tales from a Bibliophile for helping out last week. That was a lot of fun. Go check that show totally out.
And, it's a good episode. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it was a fun one to do.
I do like listening to the ones where I'm not there because I'm not there.
Well, I think it'd be fun to get Carly on like a proper HDT sequels episode.
We've promised National Treasure.
Yeah, I think it'd be a fun time.
Can we talk her into doing Ghost Rider with us? Because that's what we've talked about. Ooh. We've talked about doing Ghost Rider and National Treasure together.
We maybe. if I finish watching Daisy Jones and the Six for the episode of her podcast that I'm going to do on it, maybe I can use that as bargaining to make her watch Ghost Rider 1 and 2.
Because I really feel like we need the female perspective for the Ghost Rider movies. I think this is necessary.
We need the female gaze on Nicolas Cage.
And his CG abs.
Right. I want to do those movies. And we will do more movies. And if you want to hear more of that, find us next week. I've been Britton.
I've been Tyler. And I haven't been Tyler. But Tyler, remember, when you're editing this, this is all your fault. This is all your fault. I've been Alex. Yeah, that's right. I just checked with our producers. I am indeed Alex.
Thanks, we're Brian.
Brian, our producer. How do we end the show? Oh, yeah, you're having a good night.
You have been out of town.